Within our glorious Imperium, there exists an organization which holds an unmatched level of autonomy over its worlds, and yet is so intertwined with the dealings of Terra that neither the Imperium nor this group could likely survive without one another. The institution which I'm referring to is, of course, the Adeptus Mechanicus. These are the mysterious and somewhat abstruse adherents to the cult Mechanicus, who worship the Holy Trinity of the Machine God, the Omnissiah, and the Motive Force. Residing upon their independently governed Forge worlds, the Mechanicus Tech Priests exist as something of a vassal state, in that while they may dictate the laws and policies of their own territory, they still must contribute their production output based on the desires of the High Lords of Terra. While this agreement has been incredibly fruitful and beneficial to both parties, the Martians were not always so amenable to this accord. Today, we are to explore the Schism of Mars, which occurred during the darkest hours of the Horus Heresy, and which ultimately led to the Red Planet falling under the insidious sway of chaotic worshippers. Firstly, we will learn of the agreements between Terra and Mars, which had caused the first sparks of rebellion to occur, before moving on to the treacherous actions of Horus, who was instrumental in bringing about the downfall of our ancient ally. In the ancient days of our history, long before the time of Space Marines, Primarchs, or even the Emperor himself, mankind had begun to realize its own destiny within the stars by colonizing and conquering thousands of worlds across the vast expanse of space. Alien races were subjugated. Psykers first emerged within the flames of war, and most importantly, mankind made some of its most significant and terrible discoveries. This was the Dark Age of technology, and it was during this period that mankind reached its true apex as a galactic civilization. Lasting from the 18th to the 23rd millennium, our ancestors wrangled control of the tumultuous warp simply for space travel. We created true, abominable intelligences who were given mighty frames of metal before being sent out into the stars to act as our armies. The scientific discoveries made during this time were so advanced that even in the 41st millennium, the most learned of tech priests and scholars are still dumbfounded by any of the forbidden data scraps which can be recovered. Both Holy Terra and the newly terraformed planet of Mars had coexisted during this period as stellar empires which held a sense of neutrality towards one another and yet were generally cooperative towards furthering the betterment of humanity. The two consisted of vastly different societies, cultures, and ways of life, and yet, in this golden age of discovery and growth, the twin worlds threw in their arms together, all to ensure that mankind could conquer the very stars. This was not just a period of rapid technological growth, as humanity had also seized dominion over tens of thousands of worlds across all of space, forming the foundations of the first human galactic empire. Unfortunately, however, the unparalleled growth and expansion of our nascent species led to a most cataclysmic period of our history, known as the Age of Strife. This era was heralded by a series of tremendous warp storms, which isolated the worlds of man from one another and led to the first mass incursions of demons within our territories. Furthermore, mankind was forced to defend itself from the mass rebellions of its own AI forces. Known during this time as the Men of Iron, the AI had become utterly embedded within all aspects of human society. And so, when this revolt eventually came, it was horrifically devastating to our bewildered ancestors. Oceans were sucked up from orbit, entire worlds were scoured by nanomachines, and even the stars themselves were snuffed out of existence by the most arcane of tools which the men of iron had seized control of. Yet despite this period of terror and anguish, mankind preserved itself against the dark. The abominable intelligences were expunged from existence. And yet it seemed that any hope of mankind, standing as a galactic empire, had been brought to ruin. Every human colony had been separated from one another, with most falling to the ways of barbarism, and some even being conquered by the ravenous alien species who lurked within the deepest stars of our galaxy. This period of darkness lasted until the onset of the 30th millennium, and it is here that our story may begin. Despite being forced to endure 7 millennia of hardship and strife, mankind is nothing if not resilient, and as such, many of the former colonies and planets of man had reformed their societies and reconstructed themselves into independent and sovereign worlds. Principally amongst these surviving planets would be our venerable homeworld of Terra and the red planet of Mars. Upon the fertile and lush grasslands, the highly advanced world of Mars had not been safe from the calamitous time of strife. Hundreds of rival factions had risen and fallen, civil wars had swept the world, and many an ancient structure had been brought to ruin by the sheer levels of devastation brought about by brotherly conflict. Some of the archaic and cabalistic weapons brought to bear were so destructive that they burnt away the atmosphere which had been so tenderly and carefully formed by their ancestors. This, once again, allowed the harsh and intense radiation of the sun to burn away the surface of Mars, reducing its landscape back into naught but an acrid and carmine desert. After centuries of death and war, it seemed that one faction had at last claimed the Red Crown of Mars, and this would be the Cult Mechanicus. The ancient priests espoused the teachings of the machine god, in that all of technology was an extension of the divine, and that in order to best serve their technocratic god, that they must further the development and discovery of greater mechanical wonders. As this new faith took hold, Mars was reshaped into a planet-spanning factory. Every aspect of their society became dedicated towards the production of technological artifacts, with even the hive cities being integrated within the arcane manufactorums of the world. Their society was headed by a figure known as the Fabricator General, who at the time had quickly organized the Red Planet into becoming rather self-sufficient after the long millennia of horrors before him. In addition to rebuilding this world, their leader also began the process of sending out new exploratory fleets into the cosmos, in the hopes that they could reconnect some of the scattered worlds of humanity and potentially discover some of the bygone technologies from their golden age. The first planet they dispatched a fleet to, however, was not for exploration. It was for war. The techno-barbarians of Terra still possessed a great bounty of the forbidden weapons and artifacts from the Dark Age of technology, and the Fabricator General could not rest whilst these savages still clung onto tools which they cared not to understand. As such, the two planets entered into a protracted period of conflict, with immense raids and invasions sporadically plunging both the societies of Terra and of Mars into devastation. Long gone were the days of cooperation between the parents of humanity. However, all this changed with the onset of the 30th millennium. It was during the climactic days of the Age of Strife when the Emperor of Man first presented himself to the techno-barbarian tribes. He had emerged seemingly from nowhere, only to rapidly conquer and unify the various warring groups into a cohesive planet-spanning force, once again cementing Holy Terror as a unified and singular entity. His aspirations were simple. He had a plan to continue this conquest out through the stars, all to reunite humanity once again under a combined banner so that his species could live peacefully and prosper for all of time. With this goal in mind, he had orchestrated the formation of a newly armed force which would have the strength to propel humanity out across the galaxy, and these were the first of his space marines. Despite the size of his army, reclaiming the Milky Way was a prodigious task, and it was one which he knew could not be accomplished without a significant injection of technocratic machinery to bolster it with. And so he turned his gaze to Mars. Knowing of the arcane tools held in their arsenal and of the importance behind securing an unbreakable alliance between the two worlds, he omitted the option of conquest and chose instead to seek a more amicable and peaceful integration of their society. In the waning days of the 30th millennium, he landed upon the peak of Olympus Mons as something of a shining star to all of the Red Planet. This location was indeed a ploy by the Emperor, as when the first Tech priests were dispatched to learn of his arrival, they quickly fell to their knees in reverence of this figure, who they could only assume to be the Omnissiah himself. I should quickly note that within the cult of Mars, they worship a holy trinity, consisting of the Machine God, the Omnissiah, and the Motive Force. Whilst the Machine God may represent the omniscient, all-encompassing power of divinity found throughout the technological artifacts of the galaxy, the Omnissiah can be seen as the physical avatar of their God. It was prophesied that the Machine God ordained for an avatar to present himself to the Martians, as he would better enable them to scour the known universe for new discoveries of technocratic treasures. The Emperor likely predicted that he would have been attributed as the Omnissiah, and so his landing on the greatest of mountains, which held the home of the Fabricator General, only solidified this view in the eyes of the Martians. The two leaders quickly met to discuss the terms of alliance, which would benefit all of humanity henceforth. The Emperor posed that he would require Mars and the Forge Worlds of the galaxy to commit their production output to his forces, and that they would support him in conquering the previous vestiges of humanity. Furthermore, he also forbade the use of several archaic technologies, most notably the use of true, sentient AI. This was softened by the promise that the Martians could hold complete authority over their own worlds, dictating them in any way which they desired, so long as they remained loyal to the overall direction of the Imperium. In addition, the Tech priests would be permitted to continue in their worship of the Machine God, and their theological beliefs would not be infringed upon by any Imperial organizations going forward. After some discourse, the two parties agreed, and the new Treaty of Mars was signed within the cavernous underbelly of Olympus Mons. The Martians took upon the new name as the Adeptus Mechanicus, and the two worlds became forever tied to this mutually beneficial pact. It is said that signing this treaty was the reason behind the Emperor replacing the Raptor Imperialis with the symbol of the Aquila, with each of the two heads representing the worlds of Terra and of Mars. For many of the Tech priests, they were elated at the terms of this accord. They could continue in their reverence of all things mechanical. They could hold autonomy over their worlds. And they had even been graced with the presence of the Omnissiah himself. Nevertheless, there were some who were uneasy at the new agreement, and it was from these corrupted few that led Mars to its downfall. Not all accepted the Emperor as the Omnissiah. Even though he descended as a golden angel, clad in the finest of armors and speaking nothing but honeyed words, the Martians retained some level of suspicion regarding his motives. Many believed that he was indeed holding up a facetious visage of their god, and that he was willingly exploiting their faith in order to formulate an accord which would solely benefit himself. The sect who opposed him considered the idea of giving up their independence to be simply intolerable, especially since the Martians had long held some degree of military superiority over the stunted techno-barbarian tribes. Looking at their once proud world as now being reduced to nothing but a tethered and shackled vassal was utterly shameful and enraging to the tech priests, some of whom felt that their entire history would be wiped clean in favor of a pro-Terran tale. Furthermore, their religion was always founded upon one ideal above all others, and that was that in order to best worship their deity, that they must discover new and more advanced technologies as they were a direct gift bequeathed upon humanity. As such, the idea that they must halt in their research and utilization of artificial intelligences was tantamount to sacrilege, and yet they were forced to comply by the decree of the Pact of Mars. Amongst those who were weary of the Emperor's true intentions was a Magos known as Kelber Hal. He had been present at the signing of the fabled treaty, and to him he felt that the declaration was simply a way of avoiding what would have otherwise been an inevitable war. As he heard the Emperor speak, he saw past his shining appearance and only recognized him as a warlord who would simply take control of Mars by force if they did not comply with his insulting treaty. Despite his strong reservations, he was forced to bitterly watch as his world was signed away, but his trepidations did not end here. Over the next two centuries, much changed across the landscape of Mars. The great shipyards of the Iron Ring were abuzz, constantly churning out new barges and frigates to be sent out with the vanguard of the Great Crusade. Manufacturers groaned and belched out great clouds of smoke as they desperately attempted to meet the immense production quotas of the Emperor's armies. Perhaps the most significant change, however, was the ascension of Kelber Hal to the position of Fabricator General. He had overseen much of the intensive industrial development across the Red Planet and was surely instrumental in aiding the Emperor as he embarked out on the Great Crusade. But despite this, he was still uneasy at their alliance. The constant threat of execution if any were caught with outlawed technology loomed heavy over their heads, and it was an open secret that many of these forbidden artifacts still remained hidden upon Mars. The Emperor had ordered Kelber Hal to collect anything which he had prohibited and to seal it away in a fortified structure known as the Vault of Moravec. Having this Pandora's box of technocratic secrets hidden just below their noses was utterly tantalizing to the wayward tech priests, and yet they were forced to simply let it lie, although nothing stays hidden forever. Mars itself had become rather unstable over the long years of aiding the Imperium. Various factions were appearing, with high-ranking tech priests claiming that the Martians were going against the true will of the machine god, and that they had lost their purpose by focusing on another man's war rather than seeking out new discoveries. It was not uncommon for rival manufacturers, led by tech priests of differing ideologies, to sabotage or disrupt the other's operations. It was even rumored that some of the great Titan legions had also become swept up in this disagreement, and that the priests were desperate to leverage their support of the god engines to their own cause. This could have all ended at the level of theological and ideological debate. However, in the following years, Horus took his stance upon the galactic scene, and Mars was forever changed. With the onset of the 31st millennium came perhaps the most significant era of humanity's strange and destined tale, and this period would be defined by the civil war known as the Horus Heresy. As the corrupted War Master began to plot his rebellion, he foresaw that a siege of terror would be a most challenging and potentially fatal plan, but that it would be made ever more doable if he had the support of Mars. In order to sway the Martian cult to his cause, Horus sent an envoy to the Red Planet, headed by a tech priest known as Regulus. It was this man who first explained to him the ideological divide between those on Mars who supported the Emperor as the Omnissiah, and of those who simply saw him as a false prophet, and so there were none more suited to exploit this difference than of himself. Upon first landing on Mars, Regulus met with Kelbor Hal to explain his proposition and to outline the plans for the Mechanicus should they agree to back the War Master's operation. Despite the ambassador also being a tech priest, the Fabricator General could not help but notice the similarities between this visit and of the arrival centuries back with the Emperor. Both were outsiders who sought out something for themselves, with only meager promises being provided to the Martians should they accept. Regulus, like the Emperor, requested the sole use of the Forge Worlds at his disposal, but that they would only supply the armies of Horus rather than those of the Imperium. In return, he promised that the Fabricator General would be permitted to eliminate any rival factions upon Mars, and that he could solidify his control of the Red Planet by any means necessary. Whilst a tempting offer, this was not particularly interesting to the technocrat. The Forge Worlds of the galaxy were already prioritizing the needs of the War Master by supplying his forces throughout the Great Crusade, and so this agreement seemed to be one which would simply shift the crown of dominance from one Terran autocrat to another. He had no guarantee that Horus would provide anything beneficial to the Mechanicus, and that this entire ploy seemed to be a foolish endeavor, meant only to embolden and strengthen a new overlord. Sensing his uneasiness at the possibility that Horus would simply hold a parallel to the Emperor's rule over Mars, Regulus attempted to sweeten the deal by promising to pass over several STC databases from the recently conquered Aurician technocracy, who had been pummeled into submission by the Lunar Wolves Legion. This was a rather tempting offer. To the Mechanicus, there is nothing more sacred or enticing as a standard template construct. These ancient artifacts from the Dark Age of technology include the complete instructions on how to produce a specific piece of equipment from the natural resources of a world, including methods of mining, refining, forging, and maintenance. Even though this was a pleasant surprise to the Fabricator General, it was still not enough to sway his support to the traitor forces. Folding to his demands for more, Regulus informed him that Horus had promised to lift any prohibited fields of study from the Martians, promising them that they could research and delve into the forbidden fields of AI and genomic interference. As the final cherry on top of their agreement, he promised that they could finally open the antediluvian vaults of Moravec and plunder the sacred artifacts hidden away within its dark recesses. If you remember of their contents, then you will know that these shielded chambers contained the remnants of archaic AIs, warp-tainted technologies, and tools which could empower the Martians to a level of unmatched technological prowess. Upon hearing of this possibility, Kelbor Hal leapt at the opportunity of cracking the forbidden vault open, and he agreed to side with the arch-traitor to plunge the galaxy into flames. This can be seen as the breaking point of the delicate Treaty of Mars, and it was here that we can truly say that the Dark Mechanicus was born. As Regulus departed to inform Horus of the successful parley, the Fabricator General rushed to the secret entrance of the vaults, desperate to delve into their illicit treasures. He found the ancient remnants of tools from the Dark Age of technology, some of which were still potent enough to crush an entire star down to its core. Still, sentient artificial intelligences moaned and screeched at him through chants of archaic binary, claiming that they would annihilate his every enemy if they only gave them a body with which to kill with. Meanwhile, in the darkest corners held under arcane chains, were the databases which contained scraps of chaos-tainted code. These were shredded remains of programs which had been fragmented into thousands of pieces, since they could bring the foul touch of the warp to whatever piece of machinery they connected to. This may sound rather terrible to us, but to Kelbor Hall, he was eager to learn of the secrets behind this technology, and so he restored the ruined fragments to their ruinous state of glory and permitted them to spread across the Red Planet as a terrible virus. It only took days for the taint of chaos to worm its way into every subsystem, every cogitator, and every piece of technology across the planet. And though it did not make itself known, it was ready to unleash the powers of chaos as soon as the Fabricator General ordered the attack. Not wishing to immediately initiate a civil war, he worked with his closest advisors to bring ruin to the opposing factions of Mars, this time through direct assassination attempts and sometimes open attacks onto the rival foundries themselves. This conflict would later be known as the Death of Innocence, and it led to the deaths of millions, with entire arrays of industrial facilities being irreparably destroyed by the period of strife. These small scuffles were rather insignificant in taking complete control of the Red Planet, however. But luckily enough, the Fabricator General was soon presented with an excellent opportunity to purge the world of his enemies. The tech priestess known as Coriel Zeth had arisen to rule over the Great Forge of Magma City. However, it was due to her personal beliefs which eventually acted as the provocation for the Dark Mechanicus to plunge Mars into an open civil war. She did not worship the machine god, nor did she recognize the Omnisire. In fact, she did not follow the Martian trilogy at all, instead believing that discovery was its own innate reward and not a gift of the divine. This opinion was a rather dangerous one to hold on Mars, and it prompted the forces of Kelbor Hall to decry her as a heretic who must be expunged from their world at once. With this, the forces of the Dark Mechanicus unleashed their arsenal upon Mars. They sought to utterly scour the world of the presence of any and all who opposed their wishes and the wishes of Horus. Entire legions of Skitari forces were vaporized by the weight of nuclear ordnance levied across the Red Sands. The rival god engines of the Legio Titanica fired salvo after salvo of their sacred armaments into the forge complexes, reducing the once mighty manufacturums to fields of molten slag. The levels of devastation were so severe that in the opening hour of this war, the forces of Legio Honorum lost 19 of their mighty and revered titans to the insidious attacks of the traitors. This pales in comparison to the weight of death brought upon the forge city of Ismesnius Lacus. The Dark Mechanicus agents fired their stock of virus bombs into the city, snuffing out 14 million souls in a single instant. Furthermore, the chaotic scrap code previously seeded across Mars had been permitted to compile itself within the sacred subnets and core servers, leading to a large-scale demonic incursion across the world. Many of these immaterial forces manifested themselves within the legions of servitors and Skitari, resulting in horrific waves of mutated cyborgs, tearing their way out of the birthing factories into the enemy battle lines. Whilst Mars was quickly falling to the waves of death which swept the planet, hope soon arrived in the form of First Captain Sigismund of the Imperial Fists Legion. He had been dispatched to put down this foul rebellion, but even with his tactical prowess, it seemed to be a doomed mission. He succeeded in recapturing the forge complex of Mondus Oculum. However, the sheer volume of traitor forces before him prompted the captain to order a full retreat from the world, ultimately resigning it to its fate at the hands of the Dark Mechanicus. In the following days, the remaining loyalists who could not withdraw were hunted down and exterminated. Hundreds of Titans, primarily from Legio Tempestus, were brought low, with their crews detonating the internal plasma reactors so that the heretics could not plunder their sacred frames. Entire nighthouses were eliminated, with their legacy being cemented as defiant loyalists who fought to the bitter end against the raving lunatics of the Dark Mechanicus. Though the Red Planet may have fallen to the rule of Chaos, they were somewhat stuck in their position. The rebellion had been launched rather prematurely, and so it would still be weeks or even months until Horus reached the Sol system to aid them in their cause. The armies of the Imperium, meanwhile, had blockaded Mars with hundreds of battleships, essentially isolating the fallen world from the rest of the galactic conflict. Nevertheless, as a final act to support the traitorous forces of Horus, Kelbor Hal had orchestrated the rapid construction of a truly immense battleship known as the Furious Abyss. This had been built in secret within the great shipyards of Thule, orbiting around the gaseous giant of Jupiter. Every single servitor, tech priest, and laborer had been burnt to cinder upon the completion of this Leviathan, all to keep its construction as a secret to the entire galaxy. This ship would later be bequeathed unto the Wordbearer's Legion as a gift, and though I will not tell of the story today, it would go on to be instrumental in the devastating Battle of Kalth. This conflict resulted in such a terrible decimation of the Ultramarines Legion that they were unable to respond to Terra's desperate calls for aid during its fateful and climactic siege. It was not only Mars which had fallen to the sway of the traitorous forces. Dozens of forge worlds across the Imperium had also followed in the way of Kelbor Hal and had pledged their industrial zones to Horus, hoping that he would fulfill on his promises to allow them to continue in their research into forbidden technologies. As such, the arch-traitor had amassed a vast army of Titan legions, traitorous nighthouses, Skitari forces, and all manner of esoteric technological armaments with which to equip his armies with. Nevertheless, the forces of the Dark Mechanicus, combined with the traitor legions, were ultimately unsuccessful in their attempts at overthrowing the Emperor. Aboard the flagship known as the Vengeful Spirit, Horus was finally slain in his fateful duel with his father, and although he mortally wounded the Emperor, it still marked the end of the bloody civil war. The surviving traitor legions, along with their primarchs, were driven back from Holy Terra by the combined might of the loyalist forces and were forced to retreat into the cataclysmic maelstrom known as the Eye of Terra. This gaping rift into the warp would serve as their blasted home for the next 10,000 years, with their later incursions being naught but a blight upon our galaxy as they attempted to finish the job which Horus had started in the bygone past. Along with these treacherous and malign Astartes did most of the Dark Mechanicus follow. Witnessing the ultimate demise of Horus was the final straw for the heretical technocrats. They knew that they alone could not defend themselves from the Imperial Armada, and so any who had chosen to follow along the dark path of chaos decided to flee the great forge worlds and to pursue their tainted research within the depths of the warp itself. Though none can be sure of the final fate of Kelbor Hal, it is said that in his vestigial days as Fabricator General, that he had become infatuated with the theory that the being known as the Dark King was in fact the true form of the Omnissiah, and that his manifestation would herald a new dawn for all who followed the teachings of the cult Mechanicus. I will quickly explain that this being was a prophesied deity who would take the place as the fifth chaos god, and who would have the strength needed to ultimately defeat the four patrons to bring peace to the galaxy by wrangling control of the tumultuous tides of the warp. Rather ironically, in the waning days of the Siege of Terra, it was indeed the Emperor himself who nearly ascended to claim the crown of the Dark King. And upon learning of this, legends say that Kelbor Hal was racked with agony as he screamed to the heavens in defiance of the true grace which he had so readily rejected. As I stated, we are not certain as to whether or not the traitorous tech priest perished upon Mars in its final battle, or if he too fled to the depths of the Immaterium, but his presence has not been felt since the end of the Horus Heresy. One of the final decrees from the Emperor before he was interned upon the Golden Throne was that any remaining traitorous forces should be routed out, killed, and that any record of their existence should be expunged from official databanks. Due to this, the archives of Mars have scant records regarding its eventual recapture by the Loyalist forces. The extent of our knowledge is that once Terra was reclaimed from the heretics, that the Imperial armies did indeed invade and reclaim Mars for the Loyalist followers of the cult Mechanicus. Perhaps at a future date, some learned scholars, or even an assassin of the Vanus Temple, may decipher a lost fragment which will reveal more information to us. But for now, we are left only to speculate as to the events which transpired in the reconquest of Mars. We can only hypothesize as to the scale of retributive fury which would have been leveled upon the Red Planet for its most heinous of crimes. The Forge cities would have been reduced to rubble in order to root out any remaining vestiges of heretical worship. And it is possible that the vast databanks and routers would have needed to be purged entirely, just to remove any final traces of warp-tainted scrap code. In any event, since the end of the heresy, Mars has remained as a loyal servant to the Imperium, and the Mechanicus has kept its word in adhering to the terms of the ancient treaty, all to best serve the needs of humanity. The Dark Mechanicus still remains, but thankfully, they have been largely confined to the hellscape of the warp, where they are forced to fight for their very survival against the untold hordes of demons, who would readily pluck their fickle souls out of their hollow cybernetic frames. They still toil away in tainted foundries and corrupted forges, all to construct new demon engines and weapons of terrible destruction with which to fuel the traitorous forces who they have aligned themselves with. But we must remember, there is to be no salvation for the heretic, and upon the day of retribution, they will be shown no mercy.